Part 1.
You're going to listen to a recorded material. Before you listen, you have 20 seconds to read instructions carefully, and you will listen to it twice. You're ready to start.
Hi, Adam.
Hi.
How are you? All right?
Tired.
You look it. Did you have a bad day?
Not great. I didn't sleep well last night. I was fixing my computer until 12:30. I went to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning. Then my son woke me up at 4:20 because he felt sick.
Poor thing. Is he okay?
Oh, yes. I talked to him for 20 minutes and then he went back to sleep. I didn't. I lay awake in bed until about 6. Then my alarm went off at 7:15.
Oh, dear.
So I turned it off and went to sleep again. Then, of course, I overslept. I woke up again at 8:10. I usually leave home at 8 o'clock. I washed and dressed. I didn't have breakfast. No time. And then I forgot my wallet.
Oh, no.
Yes, I left it at home. Thankfully, I had some money in my pocket so I could buy lunch. But I had to borrow some money from a colleague to buy petrol. There wasn't enough in the car to get home.
At least you got home. Was work okay?
Yes, except for that I was tired. I had a meeting in the morning and I did paperwork in the afternoon. Nothing special.
Well, you can relax this evening. You can watch a nice film on TV.
Relax? I don't think so. I have to cook dinner tonight because my wife is working late. Then I have to take my son to football practice, walk the dog, iron some clothes, and clean the bathroom.
Now listen again.
Hi, Adam.
Hi.
How are you? All right?
Tired.
You look it. Did you have a bad day?
Not great. I didn't sleep well last night. I was fixing my computer until 12:30. I went to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning. Then my son woke me up at 4:20 because he felt sick.
Poor thing. Is he okay?
Oh, yes. I talked to him for 20 minutes and then he went back to sleep. I didn't. I lay awake in bed until about 6. Then my alarm went off at 7:15.
Oh, dear.
So I turned it off and went to sleep again. Then, of course, I overslept. I woke up again at 8:10. I usually leave home at 8 o'clock. I washed and dressed. I didn't have breakfast. No time. And then I forgot my wallet.
Oh, no.
Yes, I left it at home. Thankfully, I had some money in my pocket so I could buy lunch. But I had to borrow some money from a colleague to buy petrol. There wasn't enough in the car to get home.
At least you got home. Was work okay?
Yes, except for that I was tired. I had a meeting in the morning and I did paperwork in the afternoon. Nothing special.
Well, you can relax this evening. You can watch a nice film on TV.
Relax? I don't think so. I have to cook dinner tonight because my wife is working late. Then I have to take my son to football practice, walk the dog, iron some clothes and clean the bathroom.
Now turn to part 2.
You're going to listen to another recorded material. Again, before you listen, you have 20 seconds to read instructions carefully, and you will listen to it twice.
Welcome to local heroes Julia Im and Darren Finn, who have just returned from the World Championships with gold medals in their respective disciplines. Julia, first to you. Hearty congratulations on being the first tennis player from the country, never mind the district, to have medalled at the Games. Julia, why has it taken so long, in your opinion?
Well, had you asked me that question when I was starting out in the sport, I would have said the infrastructure was lacking. However, that has come on in leaps and bounds in recent years. Likewise, our once inadequate coaching system is now on a par with the best and sets the standard internationally, I feel. Indeed, we always had willing coaches, but as a nation relatively new to this sport, I think what we were lacking was the experience and expertise. The policy of inviting coaches from elsewhere in the world to lead our programme has paid dividends in a big way. It has added a level of professionalism to the programme that has given our athletes the edge. Granted, there has been a huge increase in financial investment alongside the investment in human resources. But, as we have seen from examples in other sports, that alone is not sufficient by any means.
Darren, you have also tasted success in one of our newer disciplines. Do you feel the same way as Julia?
Well, on the back of my success, we are due to see a hugely significant increase in funding going forward. This has been approved by the government, but we won't know whether or not the improved funding will make a difference for some time. What I can say for sure, then, is that even lacking appropriate funding, the evidence of my success clearly demonstrates that we can overachieve with professional coaching mechanisms in place. And, at present, the best coaches are indeed foreign, so attracting them here to train us has made a massive difference. And with the new investment we are expecting to receive now, hopefully the infrastructure will also improve, leading to further success at future championships.
How, Darren, were you able to achieve so much in light, as you say, of patently having so little by way of resources at your disposal compared to competitors in other countries?
Well, aside from the coaching, which I've already highlighted as pivotal, I personally was fortunate to attain private sponsorship for my training. This allowed me to focus full-time on achieving my goals. The majority of my colleagues have not been so lucky. Sports grants are given out only in disciplines where our athletes do well. So, up until now, we have had to self-finance our training, and most of my colleagues do this by holding down a job. We cannot be expected to compete with full-time professionals when, for all intents and purposes, we are still operating in an amateur system. The dire situation, lack of interest and funding, certainly motivated me to do as well as I could, knowing full well that success would ensure better support for myself and my colleagues in future.
Indeed, many people are critical about the sports funding system in this country. Clearly, Darren feels that his sport was somewhat neglected.
Now listen again.
Welcome to local heroes Julia Im and Darren Finn, who have just returned from the World Championships with gold medals in their respective disciplines. Julia, first to you. Hearty congratulations on being the first tennis player from the country, never mind the district, to have medalled at the Games. Julia, why has it taken so long, in your opinion?
Well, had you asked me that question when I was starting out in the sport, I would have said the infrastructure was lacking. However, that has come on in leaps and bounds in recent years. Likewise, our once inadequate coaching system is now on a par with the best and sets the standard internationally, I feel. Indeed, we always had willing coaches, but as a nation relatively new to this sport, I think what we were lacking was the experience and expertise. The policy of inviting coaches from elsewhere in the world to lead our programme has paid dividends in a big way. It has added a level of professionalism to the programme that has given our athletes the edge. Granted, there has been a huge increase in financial investment alongside the investment in human resources, but, as we have seen from examples in other sports, that alone is not sufficient by any means.
Darren, you have also tasted success in one of our newer disciplines. Do you feel the same way as Julia?
Well, on the back of my success, we are due to see a hugely significant increase in funding going forward. This has been approved by the government, but we won't know whether or not the improved funding will make a difference for some time. What I can say for sure, then, is that even lacking appropriate funding, the evidence of my success clearly demonstrates that we can overachieve with professional coaching mechanisms in place. And, at present, the best coaches are indeed foreign, so attracting them here to train us has made a massive difference. And with the new investment we are expecting to receive now, hopefully the infrastructure will also improve, leading to further success at future championships.
How, Darren, were you able to achieve so much in light, as you say, of patently having so little by way of resources at your disposal compared to competitors in other countries?
Well, aside from the coaching, which I've already highlighted as pivotal, I personally was fortunate to attain private sponsorship for my training. This allowed me to focus full-time on achieving my goals. The majority of my colleagues have not been so lucky. Sports grants are given out only in disciplines where our athletes do well. So, up until now, we have had to self-finance our training, and most of my colleagues do this by holding down a job. We cannot be expected to compete with full-time professionals when, for all intents and purposes, we are still operating in an amateur system. The dire situation, lack of interest and funding, certainly motivated me to do as well as I could, knowing full well that success would ensure better support for myself and my colleagues in future.
Indeed, many people are critical about the sports funding system in this country. Clearly, Darren feels that his sport was somewhat neglected.
Now turn to part three.
You're going to listen to another recorded material. Again, before you listen, you have 20 seconds to read the instructions carefully, and you will listen to it twice.
This course is proving to be much more interesting than I imagined it would be, Gareth.
Yes, it really makes you sit up and think because there's so much more to it than just architecture.
From the first day I was engrossed in it, do you remember at the beginning we were asked to model a city that would accommodate 1 million people? We were told to work out what infrastructure, housing and shopping facilities we'd include, and then keep that original model on our laptop. That was fun, but changing it as we're going through the course and making improvements has been even more enjoyable. We've saved every version so we can see how it's changed as we've learned something new.
Yes, you can easily see what you under- or overestimated would be needed. And it's amazing to think that the main idea of our city is to build up as high as possible. I didn't really consider so many skyscrapers, but it's obviously the way of the future with so many people moving to cities now.
It never entered my head that skyscrapers could be connected by sky bridges and corridors, served by elevated transport systems. And what about high-rise parks and gardens? Oh, fantastic ideas!
And let's not forget going underground. I was surprised to learn that we'll have to make more use of the space beneath our feet. Showing us the example of Singapore, where there are already shopping centres with floors that go down several stories below street level, was a real eye-opener.
All the modules on this course have captured everyone's attention. I did History of Architecture and Design at school, and this course encompasses these and more.
Yes, and other topics such as architects having to take into account economy of scale and how they achieve it, for example, by using low-energy innovations.
Those ideas particularly drew my attention. I love the notion of using ice batteries. Whoever thought up the idea of using cheap electricity at night to freeze water in the basement and then let it melt during the day to cool the air in the building was extremely imaginative.
That building, what was it called? Ah, yes, the Bank of America Tower, apart from the ice batteries, was built mainly from recycled material. It also stores rainwater to recycle and conserves water using other means. I'm looking forward to going to New York to see it, though I suppose by the time we get there it will have been superseded by another building that's taller and even more innovative.
True. And don't you think money must play a huge part? You can't just spend a fortune designing a building to suit your own ideals. After all, the owner will want to sell or rent the flats, retail space or whatever, and make a profit. Therefore, there must be a budget which would impose some limitations.
Absolutely. So, have you decided what your project will be about? I bet it's going to be along the lines of how people will move around, as well as live and relax in their ivory towers in the sky.
How did you guess? Joking aside, I'm considering focusing on how to improve escape routes in the event of some sort of disaster, coupled with designing something that can house thousands of people, but is constructed so that no one feels overcrowded or cramped.
Sounds good. I'm going to concentrate on solar power, not just from the point of optimizing solar energy for heating, more from the penetration of the sun into the building so that everyone gets enough light in their home. Also, so the sun is not blocked out in the gardens, walkways or parks that you mentioned earlier. Taller buildings also shouldn't block out the sun on other shorter buildings.
Good luck with it.
Now listen again.
This course is proving to be much more interesting than I imagined it would be, Gareth.
Yes, it really makes you sit up and think because there's so much more to it than just architecture.
From the first day I was engrossed in it. Do you remember at the beginning we were asked to model a city that would accommodate 1 million people? We were told to work out what infrastructure, housing and shopping facilities we'd include. And then keep that original model on our laptop. That was fun, but changing it as we're going through the course and making improvements has been even more enjoyable. We've saved every version so we can see how it's changed as we've learned something new.
Yes, you can easily see what you under or overestimated would be needed. And it's amazing to think that the main idea of our city is to build up as high as possible. I didn't really consider so many skyscrapers, but it's obviously the way of the future with so many people moving to cities now.
It never entered my head that skyscrapers could be connected by sky bridges and corridors, served by elevated transport systems. And what about high-rise parks and gardens? Oh, fantastic ideas.
And let's not forget going underground. I was surprised to learn that we'll have to make more use of the space beneath our feet. Showing us the example of Singapore, where there are already shopping centres with floors that go down several stories below street level, was a real eye-opener.
All the modules on this course have captured everyone's attention. I did History of Architecture and Design at school, and this course encompasses these and more.
Yes, and other topics such as architects having to take into account economy of scale and how they achieve it, for example, by using low-energy innovations.
Those ideas particularly drew my attention. I love the notion of using ice batteries. Whoever thought up the idea of using cheap electricity at night to freeze water in the basement and then let it melt during the day to cool the air in the building was extremely imaginative.
That building, what was it called? Ah, yes, the Bank of America Tower, apart from the ice batteries, was built mainly from recycled material. It also stores rainwater to recycle and conserves water using other means. I'm looking forward to going to New York to see it, though I suppose by the time we get there it will have been superseded by another building that's taller and even more innovative.
True. And don't you think money must play a huge part? You can't just spend a fortune designing a building to suit your own ideals. After all, the owner will want to sell or rent the flats, retail space or whatever, and make a profit. Therefore, there must be a budget which would impose some limitations.
Absolutely. So, have you decided what your project will be about? I bet it's going to be along the lines of how people will move around, as well as live and relax in their ivory towers in the sky.
How did you guess? Joking aside, I'm considering focusing on how to improve escape routes in the event of some sort of disaster, coupled with designing something that can house thousands of people, but is constructed so that no one feels overcrowded or cramped.
Sounds good. I'm going to concentrate on solar power, not just from the point of optimizing solar energy for heating, more from the penetration of the sun into the building so that everyone gets enough light in their home. Also, so the sun is not blocked out in the gardens, walkways or parks that you mentioned earlier. Taller buildings also shouldn't block out the sun on other shorter buildings.
Good luck with it.